All right, everyone, we are at 12:47, so starting a couple minutes late, but not too late. We do have quite a bit of time together to talk about high net worth prospecting. Before we jump into it, I wanted to introduce myself. I'm Tiffany Charles. I own wealth management firm Destiny Capital and Entrepreneur Aligned. Started as a private client with Stephanie in 2017. And then joined the Limitless program from the start. So she, as she's alluded to, came out of retirement, started writing for the Investment News. About two articles in, I was like, who are you? I need your help. I'm failing miserably. I have no idea who I am. And I'm just in this really bad place. And she responded and said, I am taking private clients. So that's where the journey started. Stephanie Bruno is here to present with me. Do you want to share a little bit about yourself? And then I'll share how we know each other.
Yeah, I think I've met a lot of you. So I'm Steph Bruno. I was in the inaugural class with Tiff. Years one and two, I had my own firm, Cedar Peak Financial Advisors. And I grew that firm. And then last year, I merged that firm into Mission Wealth. So, you know, we're here just to talk about how we were able to implement a lot of things from Limitless that were really helpful to us and show you that there is a path and that there are great things you can learn here and do and really just try and be helpful to you as you're navigating all of this. So that's our goal today, is to give you the information that we think was most helpful to us in growing our businesses and making them successes, but also make sure we answer all of your questions as well too.
Yeah, and a big part of that success is utilizing the Limitless community. So Steph and I, we went on the Costa Rica trip after the very first year. So after the first year, Stephanie Bogan and Limitless team was like, who's up for coming to Costa Rica in January and spending time together and going really deep? We had the beautiful Elise McConnell, who is no longer with us, however, life coach who was down there with us to just deepen who we are, what we do, how we do it, and be very authentic in how we come together. And so we got to just come together and get really vulnerable about like where we're doing well, where we're not. And sometimes at these conferences, there's a level of like, it can feel surfacey or that people really have it together. And then you go down and you get time with one another and you're like, oh my gosh, like none of us have it together. And we can have it all together if we just come together. And we got to do those affirmation circles. And here we are years later. We still meet monthly with our entire Costa Rica crew.
There's 13 of us.
There's 13 of us.
I like to joke that part of it was bribery for re-enrolling too. As you can imagine, the first year was a new year and there were little hiccups and everything, but it was a great group.
Yeah. And so we also go on trips annually together as a mastermind group. This year we're doing some wineries. There was Santa Fe last year. It was Denver the year before. There's definitely, hopefully, Costa Rica redo in our future. But the community is so powerful. We lean on each other for everything. We share resources. What's happening in your business? How are you letting go of this client? What are you doing here? How did that merge happen? What happened there? We can trust each other before events happen. Like we can trust each other after events happen. So there's such power in this room to building your business. It can be real lonely to build what we're building. And it can be very overwhelming. And maybe your spouse doesn't get it. Maybe your business partner doesn't get it. Your employees don't get it, but your group does, your community does here. So what's really great about Limitless is the power of the community and your masterminds. So tomorrow's a really big day on masterminds and continuing to develop that. But we foresee that Steph and I actually have a second one, and which was like a mastermind. So we had the Costa Rica one, and then we had our mastermind, and that now meets quarterly years after. Several are no longer a part of the program, or ebb and flow based on like refinement and implementation, wherever they're at in the journey. But we come together on a quarterly basis of like, what's happening in your business? How can we help one another? Like Google Doc sharing, like you name it, we're there. And so that's how we know one another. And we're super excited to be up here to present with you on high net worth prospecting and do it together. And we both kind of acknowledge the fact that it's not very often that two females in wealth management get to do something like this. So we're also excited to be repping that as well. All right, so high net worth prospecting. Market. Yes. Hi. How are you going to make him prove it? He's just trusting his word. marketing efficiency results by strategy. So when we're thinking about prospecting, all strategies work. You can't do all strategies. And when you think about size of firm, typically in like solo type firms, you see a majority, like over 50 to 60% coming through client referrals and center of influence referrals. So referral heavy. And then there's a little bit of business development there. There could be some SEO, there could be some webinars, seminars, those types of things, podcasting. And as you grow into Ensemble and Enterprise, you see that starting to shift a little bit where maybe client referrals and center of influence referrals is going down somewhere between 30 to 45%. While business development in all of those broader categories is starting to play a larger role. We're definitely seeing that in like custodian referrals for some of those enterprises. Like that's starting to take a huge, huge momentum in business development there. We're also seeing a lot more obviously in podcasting and digital means. But what this is showing is there's a lot of ways in which you can do your marketing. There's efficiency related to it and revenue per client. And so there's a matter of thinking about when you're doing high net worth prospecting, where and how you're spending your time. And community and personal connection starts playing a huge role in what you're looking for when it comes to connecting with higher wealth or ultra wealth, because your experience matters and the ability to build trust is different than just having a podcast, right? And just sending out some client communications, showing up to an event. Their complexities are different and they're really looking, it's a slower trust build. So how are you consistently giving, you know, the credits to that trust equity and that relationship equity to the higher net worth prospects? So you really start looking into community and the experience economy very differently. And then other pieces just become supportive of that prospecting. Do you have anything to add? Okay. So passion prospecting. This session is also about, as we started alluding to, in the niche and where you really like to be. Passion prospecting shows up really well in high net worth. So what do you enjoy doing? And how do you, that you then create the communities and opportunities there? So for instance, there's an advisor out in Colorado. And he really, really enjoys fishing. And he flies to Montana. And he is with the ultra high net worth. And he spends his weeks on ranches fishing. Do you know how long people fish for? Hours. Like he is with them for 7 to 8 hours. What do you think is coming up in those conversations, right? Any of those trips, he's coming back with 10, 20, $30 million clients. He also is really... I'm trying to think of we go to it every year. It has the farm animals. It's at the convention center. Yes. When I was pregnant, I used to play this game where I was like, you know, it's like attached to the house, you had doors and you put your car in it and it's like the garage. I'm like, yes, I lose my mind. But the stock show, like he's super passionate about like the farming and how this whole stock show sits on the board. Do you know who else sits on the board of the stock show? Super high net worth people. And do you know who else like brings their animals and wants those connection? Really high net worth. So passion and prospecting, like how are we bringing those things together?
Yeah, I'll just add, I was really passionate about women's issues and women's economic security. My mom had no economic power, so she raised me to be very financially self-sufficient. So when I was at a position where I could volunteer, I started volunteering with the Women's Foundation of Colorado. I too had a practice in Colorado. I'm in Seattle now. And really through those relationships, I eventually, first of all, I was on the investment committee. So that was one thing I did. And early on, I didn't really get a lot of referrals from people involved with that organization, but the investment advisor for the investment committee had a practice where they mainly worked with foundations and endowments. They wound up referring a lot of great private clients to me. And that's just a relationship of trust. And he still refers great private clients to me today. And then also, you know, I eventually went on the board of that foundation, and a lot of my clients that I met through just doing really good work, not by showing up and saying, hey, I've got this practice, let's do this, but we just happen to work together. And then we, you know, from that relationship, it starts to bud.
Yeah. Remember, it's not about selling, it's about serving. So as you're really thinking about what you're passionate about and how you're going to show up, it's about how you're in service of there, and the opportunities naturally come. You always get your opportunity to say what you do and how you do it and what you're passionate about. And it's great when you're in environments that, those passions collide. So we really need to think about who are we? Like, what excites us? Where do we like to be? How do we like to spend our time? I am not going to huge networking events anymore. I never liked it. And it was always told to me, right? Like, when you start, who are your natural 100? You need to cold call them. I've knocked on doors. I've cold called. I've done all that stuff. First of all, it's not where you're finding high net worth prospects, right? You may stumble upon one, but then how are you building the relationship equity? But number two, I hated it. I was going into those things and I was trying to find a way to get out. You know what I love saying? I'm a financial advisor, because it was like the plague. It was like I was carrying it and I didn't have to answer anything else, right? Like, how was I ever going to grow business that way? So I needed to find a place where I was like, what am I really passionate about? Similar to Stephanie, I am really passionate about women, and even more so now that I've grown into entrepreneurship myself, women entrepreneurs. So I'm finding places that they go to, and it gets quickly, how do you get exposure? It naturally starts happening because you're like exuding your passion and somebody's like, you know who you need to know? You need to know this person. You know what, you know where you need to go participate? You need to go participate over here. Well, how do I do that? Oh, let me make the introduction for you. Like, when you're clear, the doors open. And then obviously you have to remain committed. So anything from a marketing or prospecting standpoint is not an event. It's a habit. Do you know investment bankers, their average pipeline is 10 years before they earn the business. They nurture that pipeline for 10 years in order to get the opportunity to sell a business. Ours is not having to be that long, but it is a process. It is a habit. It's not like I'm just going to go and meet this person and be like, hey, your entire net worth, I'm a trusted advisor. Give it to me, right? Like, there's a level of like, how am I coming in service to the things that they are also passionate about, that they see me as that trusted person, that they then too would allow us the opportunity to help them personally. And then traditional COIs, just again, thinking about the referral base and growing traditional COIs, just check out the lessons there, but like similar to how you would approach passion prospecting, the COIs is just a matter of, are you clear on who you're serving, and then creating the system in order, the messaging in order to let your COIs know, and then knowing where they're showing up. Do any of your passions align there? Or is there something in which you can be in service to your COIs to allow them to show up in the space that they want to? A lot of the prospecting that I do is literally connecting things outside of wealth management, like understanding their pain points or opportunities and finding ways to help them. So this is an awkward slide because I'm like, there's me. But when I was thinking about who I am and what I was really excited about, entrepreneurship, mindfulness, I'm in life coaching. I'm with other brilliant women. It's called Brilliance, who care about living a good life and making an impact multiplier in the spaces that they are. I'm really into community organizing. I love to just connect people and connect things so that the community grows and people feel seen and heard. Family events. I'm a soccer coach. Like, I think it's super important to like get time with my kids and show up wherever they are. I'm volunteering at school when I can. Women causes. I'm super, super passionate about breaking some ceilings for women and making it easier on the next generation of women as the generation before me did. Investment groups. This tends to be female oriented for me as well, but I'm a part of a lot of women entrepreneurship groups who are looking to become and provide funding for more women entrepreneurs. It's just really severely underfunded. It's under 2%, and there's more that needs to be done there. So like, how are they starting those groups, and what can I give given the experience I have in being an entrepreneur myself in wealth management and how to build those funds? And then I love traveling. And so like travel groups and real estate investment groups and all of those things that come together, like, I love all of that stuff. So When I think about all that, I'm like energized to show up to those spaces and give. And as I'm looking at those things, they've grown over time where maybe it started out with, I don't know, like they're just all groups that evolved over time where they had more opportunities to give. They had more wealth. They were tied to more people. Their natural influence grew, which created more influence, but we're all bound in a way to open doors for one another. And that can be true in anything that you're passionate about, sports, animals, like investment groups, people, whatever it looks like. But where do the people that you want to attract hang out? What are they interested in? What are they reading? How are they reading that? How are they taking in that information? These are all really good things to know about your high net worth prospect. Do you have any, where do you, what are you passionate about?
Well, so women's economic security, and one of the other areas, especially as a business owner and also serving on community boards, is working on my leadership skills. So I actually did a lot of the programs for, through the Denver Metro Chamber Leadership Foundation. So they have Leadership Denver. They also had Colorado Civic DNAs. I have to tell you, a lot of those people became my clients because they were all programs where we got to know each other as people and we trusted one another. And then when they had a need, they're like, oh, Steph can help. I know her and I really trust her. So again, it's got to be passion. You can't fake that. I mean, you got to want to be able to go through those programs or have a need to go through. But when I look back at that, I mean, they're also people I really enjoy too. So it's just, to me, it's like, oh gosh, what a privilege to be able to help serve these people. And they are great clients and they also refer a lot of other people, and they tend to refer other classes of Leadership Denver, right? So mm-hmm. there's a big competition, Leadership Denver 2014, 2020, but they tend to refer other people as well too. So keeping that in mind. Also look at your, sometimes your spouse's networks. My spouse runs a private school, so now I've got, ironically, a couple of heads of school as clients as well, too. So, you know, think about the plays where you're just naturally meeting people as well. And that could be something to think about, too. I know Adam talks a lot about his wife and they built a career around her career. So,
yeah, like the family events is like a big one. I'm naturally just meeting people and getting curious about them on the soccer, the field, the hockey. Like ice time is a hard time. So like, you know, after a coffee or two, then I'm starting to connect to them. But you know who else does it really well? Seth Streeter, President?
He's not CEO. What is he gave up being CEO. Yeah, so it. He's founder, I think is the way he does.
Of Mission Wealth. But he does life planning. Like he's super passionate. He does a lot of really cool things. Like he has a lot around like the water and ensuring clean ocean and all of those types of things. But he does this life planning in which he is a part of EO, the entrepreneur, or YPO, the Young President's Organization. And he goes around and he just does life planning with them. But you know, like, you know, he gets a lot of opportunities to serve YPO members across the globe because he's just so passionate about making them live their best life and had built an entire curriculum out around that totally outside of wealth management. And he gets a ton of opportunities for Mission Wealth to bring in clients that they love to work with. And so you just really looking and leaning into those passions. Speaking of that, in your workbook, we have a place where you can start exploring that today so that you don't go home just hearing this, but really taking the moment on who you are, what you enjoy, where would those, you know, what type of clients you enjoy working with, and then how do those things come together? How do they come together from a personal perspective? How do they come together from a broader group? Again, what are they reading? What are they listening to? What do they enjoy? Like just all of those things so that you can start looking into how do you start showing up in the world of the clients that you want to be serving?
Yeah. And we'll take some time at the end to actually work through that. Yes. And, but feel free to ask questions along the way too. Okay.
All right. So again, there can be a lot of areas in which you can focus here. This all comes down to the niche. So thinking of the events that happen in each one of these individual lives that you're specializing in. So what events happen in business owners that possibly could be somewhere that you're showing up with them, independent women, retirees, professionals. The life events matter because that's where feeling, emotion, and pain points and possibilities come into play. So listing all of those out, and then also finding the area in which you're like, I have that down better than anyone, or I want to have that down better than anyone. And I'm going to develop something around that. And I'm going to show up in that space. Right. So when we were exploring business owners earlier, there was a level of like, is it the 45-year-old or the 75-year-old? The 75-year-old cares a lot more about X in succession, but the 45-year-old cares more about equity planning and continuity, right? Like different things in which you're looking to show up, where they would go to get the information, who they're hanging out with in order to feel connected to are different. So you want to know the life events that are happening in the people that you're serving. So you can determine, you only have so many hours and all the strategies work, you can't work all the strategies. So you need to be really clear on which ones you're choosing to invest your time in so that you're not spending your time. Anything to add there? Yeah. So passion prospecting process, as we talked a little bit earlier about trust equity and relationship equity. You're making debits or credits to that relationship or that equity at any given point. And passion prospecting is a lot more than just, I run a wealth management firm and you should trust me because we've been in business for 40 years, right? Like it's so much more than that. How do you show up and authentically connect? How do they know that you know what it's like to be in their shoes? How do they know that you're better than Goldman Sachs, right? Like working with entrepreneurs and business owners and they have events and liquidity's happening. We're competing against that. Like, what do we have to offer when they lower the banking rate? You know, what does that look like? How are we really developing those relationships? Go ahead.
No, I'll add it up to
you. I was gonna say connecting authentically. Again, when you're able to show up in places that you love to show up to, you can connect authentically. I don't go to my brilliance group and talk about like how I'm helping clients. Like I go there and I'm also a female executive participant of it, looking to better my life and be participating in the life coach. I'm doing the meditation with them. I'm going through it and I'm just naturally connecting. But they know what I do. And I often get the question of, I have this happening in my business. Can we go grab a coffee and can you help me? Hey, I'm not sure if I'm your client. What does that look like? How do you help me? Or how do I know I'm ready for you? Those questions are naturally coming up. Entrepreneurship, TrueSpace. It's a community that focuses on entrepreneurs who are at a $3 million revenue and they want to scale to 10. And they spent all this time doing research and $15 million to develop like how you get there. What did the companies that were successful to do it, what did they change so they weren't in the cul-de-sac of staying in 3 million? Because it becomes enduring after that in order to succeed. That community, even though they only accept 5 new members a month, totally Entrepreneur Alliance community. So I go to the owner and I have a conversation with him and I was like, wow, it really seems like you're doing great things here. Like not only is my business in this place and I want to learn, like we're a $4 million firm looking to be 10 million in 3 years. Like I want to learn from you and I want to understand your research and I want to be able to be a value part of the community where we can help and give away the information we are, because traditional wealth management has failed entrepreneurs and here's this and that. And he's like, oh my gosh, we totally need to be doing this together. We are a paying member so that we get the opportunity to be a part of that. It was an investment we were willing to make because I know the cost of client acquisition. I know exactly who they're bringing in and the qualifiers there and that they're good clients. I'm around 90% of the people in that room are our ideal clients. That's a room I want to invest in and be a part of. I can't go there and be like, hey, I'm your wealth management person. I have to meet every one of these entrepreneurs and be like, we're in the same place. I'm having the same human capital problems. I need to become a more predictable business as well. Like, how are you doing that in your business? What are you doing? Oh, it's interesting. How are you funding that? What does that look like from a capital structure from behind? And then they start asking our advice on that capital structure. And we're starting to be able to give tidbits of that. But I'm never soliciting or selling. I'm participating as a member. And I have authentic connection and genuine similar needs to what they're solving. And then I happen to have the expertise to solve it on a personal side and not the business side. And we get to connect those dots. So it's really brilliant place to be. How about some of yours?
Well, I was just going to add, you know, I was sort of like Tiffany, like prospecting was sort of like, you just feel like you don't want to be that, you know, sell to all your friends and family or give me 10 names. So I almost went the opposite way. You know, at first in my firm, I was like, you know, didn't want to sell. And so one of the things that really helped me is I went through the CEG coaching for the Affluent program. And one of the things that they have that I think it's not quite as naturally authentic, but it is an authentic process is, you know, if you have a niche that you serve or a group that you think you want to serve. So say you want to serve dentists for some reason, the process that they suggest is that you approach people from a research standpoint and say, you know, I have these clients and I want to better understand what are the financial challenges that dentists face? Or it could be, you know, attorneys in Washington, D.C. What are the unique financial challenges you face? Would you mind sitting down with me for 30 minutes and having a conversation? And when you get that meeting, first of all, I never had anybody turn me down. Sometimes it took a while to get scheduled. But whenever we had one of those meetings, I went to them with, you know, I probably had 10 questions. We usually only got through five, but they were very specific questions. And, you know, I actually told them, look, I'm going to compile this information and write an article on it. I'll send it, you know, when you're done. It's perfect for blogging and other things to make you an expert. But what happened is not right away. When you go into those meetings, you're not allowed to sell. You do not sell one bit. You don't even talk about your firm. They may ask and you say, okay, this is not really about that. I will send you some information, but really, I just want to talk to you today about your needs and what you're doing. But then they realize through the questions that you're asking that you are approaching them much more differently than the people who are just trying to sell them something. You are valuing them as a person. And I will tell you, I didn't get a lot of those people as clients right away, but when I look back, a lot of them became clients. When they had a need, they came to me because we already had a trusted relationship at that point in time. And of course, you know, I kept up with those people. I might ask them if it's okay. I add them to my newsletter, or if I had an article that I thought, you know, especially if I published the blog where I did this piece, I would send that to them. So that to me was a much more natural way to get in front of people authentically and do that. I think we'll talk about a few more, so I'll save those as well.
Yeah. And as you just said, like the trust equity there, right? Like your job is to plant those seeds and water it. Like I don't jump into this thinking I'm going to get like, I'm like, oh, like the big TrueSpace events coming up in April. Like I need to walk away with five new clients. Like that's no longer the goal. I'm like, how many genuine seeds can I plant where they're calling upon me or we're creating an additional connection? Like how can I be in service of five people there that it's so valuable that they remember who we are and what we do, right? Like what am I doing to do that? And a lot of times it's just getting curious about where they're at and making a connection to somebody else. A lot of my growth in securing high net worth clients has literally just become opening doors to other people. Cause I'm like, oh, you have that need. So this person totally over here can solve that. Like I have nothing to do with it. It's just the connection standpoint. So again, that relationship equity, like how do I deposit as much as I possibly can and plant those seeds and the opportunities arise. Virg, did you have a question?
So I find that I'm competing a lot against banks,
sure,
that have wealth management divisions and wirehouses.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm always competing against big budgets, mm-hmm, marketing budgets. They host events. They're well penetrated. You know, so they're just kind of all over.
Yeah.
And so the challenge I have is how do I position myself? You know, sometimes I don't know if I should compete on price. Should I compete on experience? I mean, the role that I'm playing with a lot of the early stage founders I'm working with is, you know, I'm playing that role of the door opener right now.
Yeah.
But beyond that, like there's an uncertainty over where our relationship will end up. So I just, that's kind of where I feel like I don't know what kind of experience I'm actually giving them.
Sure. How are you receiving that feedback? Or is there a way that you're deepening that those relationships outside of opening doors for them?
I mean, I attempt to see them like quarterly or at least semi-annually.
Yep.
You know, grabbing coffee, grabbing lunch, whatnot, you know, what's the update? You know, they're always enthusiastic to talk about their company and whatnot.
Yep.
And then, you know, and I always make the offer to, you know, is there another, you know, someone that you want me to introduce you to type of thing?
Sure. Yeah, it sounds like, so I don't think that you're looking to necessarily compete on price. So when I hear that, I'm like, they're always going to have a bigger budget than we are. They're always going to have those 25 bips off the mortgage that we can't offer, right? Like the SBA loan or whatever it looks like, how's that showing up? But what we're looking to do is like, what's your key messaging around that, that creates the experience that they're looking for? Like you have the ability to get to their pain points differently or uncover differently because of the relationships you're already developing with them. So how are you getting to that point? We talked about it a little bit at lunch with the group I was sitting with, but we talked about like the client advisory board or having like the client feedback sessions and doing a one-by-one and taking them and like saying like, hey, I want to get real vulnerable about my business and ask you some questions about it. Like, here are the things, like I work with a lot of clients like you, here are some of the things that I'm doing. Like, how does that show up in your world? Again, to Steph's point, like the research based of like, here's how that's happening. Here's what I'm doing in the business so that you're getting an opportunity to deepen and share what you do.
But I still feel like I'm competing against like their army and then their market collateral. Like they're going to, you know, they'll just dump it. And it's like, you know, they're dripping.
Yeah, but we're all on Zoom now, right? So it's a little different. So I would just suggest that maybe you don't, it might be also like a limiting belief to some extent too. Like here's the big people, they have more to offer. You have more to offer. You have probably a lower client ratio to client than they do from that standpoint. So I think going into those relationships with more confidence with it too, because I don't think, you know, I've never felt like I had to worry about competing against a Merrill. An independent has way more. I mean, you're just not biased. There's so much more. Not that if there's anybody here with Merrill, is I don't want to be offensive, but I just think you've got a lot to offer. I know you're practiced. You're doing a lot of great things. So especially now that we're all like in a Zoom and virtual environment and nobody's using collateral and things like that, I think you can compete.
Yeah, I really feel the same way. Like, I don't really feel like I'm in competition. And honestly, if they want the Goldman, they don't want Entrepreneur Aligned. Like, we're so different in the experiences that we're offering and the depth in which we're serving. And so there's going to be levels, like there's clients that sometimes go that way. And I'm like, that was meant to be, right? Like, but I don't feel like the areas that we're getting opportunities from or the doors that are being opened for us, like we're showing up really strong in those. So I don't fear somebody else's marketing budget. Again, I'm not looking to serve a majority of the population. If Entrepreneur Aligned can serve 250 entrepreneurial families, like we've changed the corner from our corner of the world. We've done exactly what we're looking to do. So super selective about who gets on our bus.
I would look at the Dan Allison referral program too for the surveying as well.
Yeah. Eli?
Yeah, hi. Question for Steph, actually, is when you were mentioning that you were approaching some of the target clients and just really trying to understand their pain points and interviewing them, how did you approach, could you go a little deeper as to how you actually made that approach to them and let them know, hey, here's, I'm not selling, I want to understand what you're all about, what your pain points are. How did you go about presenting that so that they agreed to sit down and meet with you?
Yeah, so I think the first place you might start, so if you are serving lawyers in DC, you might just start with one of your lawyer friends and say, you know, I'm looking to talk and get some research. Is there somebody that you know who I could sit down with for 30 minutes? I promise I'm not trying to sell them anything, but you know, I love working with you. I'm trying to figure out what other pain points people have. And you could sit down and have the same, you can walk them through the conversation you're going to have with that person so they understand it as well. I would also look on LinkedIn, see if there's anybody connected to the people you want to sit down with. Anytime you run into anybody who's in that group, have a conversation and say, hey, would you mind if you say, could you help? Nobody says no, right? If you just say, can you help me? I'm doing some research on this and here's why I'm doing it. So you've just got to kind of get out there and make those connections. But if you already have some of those clients, that might be a place to start. And then when I would do one of those at the end, I would say, is there anybody else that you think it would be good for me to talk to? Because usually they're like, oh, you need to talk to so-and-so or something like that. Or yeah, one of my partners might be willing to sit down with you for a few minutes or something like that. So
yeah, that was a huge way in how we started to build Entrepreneur Aligned. I had it where I needed to have 5 lunches a month with entrepreneurs and just ask them questions. It's where a lot of our messaging came up. It's where I understood where the conflict between why they didn't work with financial advisors. I had to sit there and listen to a lot of like why entrepreneurs did not like financial advisors, because we only call upon them when they have a liquidity event and we don't care otherwise a lot. And the conflict of interest, right? Like, well, turns out I'm your best client in 20 years because I didn't build my wealth through the public markets. So how are you guys here saying that this is the way to do it, right? Like sitting there and taking that in, I'm like, oh, like key message. You know, we changed our fees so that we no longer sit in a seat of conflict of interest. Like, oh, like, do you know how much burnout was existing upon these entrepreneurs? Like you guys all became captive to your own creation. Oh, traditional wealth management has failed you. Well, my destiny capital side is traditional wealth management, right? Like, so I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, it's totally failed you. And I'm like, but it turns out it didn't fail 90% of the population, right? And that is some, there's a place for that to serve. But the 10% who's taking risks that are different than you, it has. And we're here to solve that problem. And so it's a really interesting way, again, through research and questions, to start to understand where the problems exist, how you differentiate yourself. And the key question always, center of influence and prospects, anything is, hey, who are like 2 really other important people that I can talk to and like just continue my research? Center of influence, who are 2 other professional partners that you work with that you just love? And why is that? Would you be willing to make those introductions? Just keep asking and they continue to show up and you continue to get the opportunities. People are willing to help.
Yeah. And I would also add, don't limit it to just financial. Like you might just say, as I'm broadening my services, I want to make sure I'm serving this. What are 2 things that would make your life really easier? You know, like it might be knowing a personal trainer. It might be a personal assistant service. It might be a food delivery. You know, what are 2 things that might make your life easier? And so you can talk about, really want to broaden my services so that my clients have good resources or relationships for that.
Yeah. Turns out a lot of center of influence don't know how to run like business development networking. So I give them my center of influence stuff. I'm like, hey, here's like the 3 meeting setup and agenda so that you can continue to deepen that. Or they don't have certain things in business planning. You just sit down and do business planning with part of the, you know, and like just continue again. How are you showing up authentically and uncovering so that you have ways to be in service and add value? And they think of you and you get opportunities. You're seeding. What I just said, being a capital contributor. So these are just all the areas in which I'm contributing. Like it was really meaningful to me and really important to me to give back to other advisors. One of our internal mission is to create an environment where talented people can thrive. And I want to do that at more than an organizational level. And I was doing that one by one by one when Steph was like, please come and coach. And because I can't keep taking mentors or mentees underneath me, like I was burning out. On the soccer field, right? Like I'm being like, hey, we should join that tournament and don't worry. Like, what if I took the lead in like doing a fundraiser? So it didn't have to come out of anybody's pocket. Naturally showing up. And I'm also showing a little bit about money. Well, what do you do for a living? Oh, like I own a wealth management company, but I love this stuff. Like, I just can't wait to be there for the kids and contribute more and those types of things. Women events and just showing up where it really matters to me in the community. So any opportunity I get, again, it's not an event, it's a habit. Like if you're committed to the growth and finding the prospects and showing up to serve and what is excites you, 1, it doesn't feel like work. And 2, you gain the opportunities, but consistently going out there and showing up in those spaces. Do you want to add to this one? I feel like I've been talking a lot. So this is where it's, hey, like you, experience matters when you're working with high net worth professionals. They're going to check you out. They're going to make sure that you're legitimate. And so it's not a matter of just like having the right message in the story. It's also the ability to back that up. So where can they find you to ensure when they're doing their research, because they do, and they will, that you're being validated in the things that you're doing. So your content needs to support that. Your website needs to support that. The way you're showing up on LinkedIn, like I am amazed how many people look to see what my LinkedIn connections look like. And like they look at numbers, like there's a status aspect to it. Like there's like a who you're connected to. And the last question's like, hey, I saw you were connected to this person. How do you know them? Right? Like there's a level of like testing on what's your real experience and how are you truly connected to this community? Oh, like, how do you know that person? What did that look like? And so for me, like, again, in being authentic every time in front of, especially the women entrepreneurs, because of how fraternal that is, honestly, nationally, but like, certainly in Colorado where we're starting our base, like, I know that I have to show up really well because that person's talking to this person over here and I'm consistently being checked upon to ensure that what Entrepreneur Align does and how it serves is being shared. So we know that has to show up in client experience, right? So the clients that we have that are entrepreneurs, when they're out in the community sharing, that we're validating there as leaders of the firm, that we're validated there. When we say we're showing up at community events that we're giving, like we just can't drop the ball. So it's really important. Like if it's somebody who is on the earlier side of like their accumulation, they're just coming out and they're like, hey, I want to buy my first house and all that stuff. They're probably not going to that extent to validate. Did it sound good enough for them to make the decision? Yeah. When we're talking $10, $20 million of net worth, they want to know what you're saying exists and that the value is there before they'll make a decision. It's not fast.
Yeah. And I will just back that up. Credentials do matter for high net worth. They are looking at that to make sure they're dealing with the right people. Won't get you the job, right? But they are looking to make sure you have those credentials. What I did when I had a solo firm is I did a lot of just videos that I could do myself on my phone. I learned how to edit them, which was pretty simple. And I would post them to LinkedIn, right? Yeah. Here's three things you need to know about the two tax laws. Here's the difference between a traditional IRA and a rollover IRA. Try and keep them quick and down. You can also work with, a marketing group, like try and get 10 or 12 people, maybe your COI group, together. And on Thursday mornings, you all go in and comment on each other's posts so that you can kind of get the rankings up a little bit. That's a good way to do it. It's a lot of work, but it is also something if you can do it consistently and show up. So when that person goes to your LinkedIn feed, they see this great video that they find informative. So it should, again, be towards your audience. And if you're doing that research, that's the perfect one to take out one of those questions and say, you know, I've been interviewing DC lawyers and they are telling me this is their biggest challenge. Well, here's some thoughts on that, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden you've got comments from all of your group, people saying, oh, this is great. Or this is good. Oh, I just so enjoy working with you. I mean, it's a lot of work. It's one of the reasons I joined NationWell because I didn't want to do it, yeah. but it does help and it does validate you in that marketplace and it can be done.
Yeah. How are you serving your own mission? Are you an example of it? Like if we exist to help entrepreneurs live a remarkable life during and after their entrepreneurial journey, then I have to show that Wednesday status where I'm at my kid's school and not working, right? Like I'm on that hike because I have personal agency. And oh, by the way, I was also at that event that really mattered for other entrepreneurs. And oh, by the way, I was also at the investment group. Like I'm learning to become the influencer that I never wanted to be, right? Because I'm trying to validate that what we do, one, I'm living proof. And it's hard. Like I'm not always living proof. Like I have aspirations to be where some of my clients are. But it doesn't matter. I'm taking the steps to do it just like I want any of our clients to. And two, if they searched me, they'll see it. They'll see podcasts that I've been on, right? Like there's industry respect. There is the ability to be a working mom and consistently with my kids on top of consistently contributing to the community, on top of hanging out with my clients and doing VIP events. Like that matters. And it matters in particular to the clients that we're serving. They're fraternal and they are really, really like they hold it tight on who they let in, right? Because there's a lot of people that are attracted to entrepreneurs and how to service them. And so like, it is really important that I'm showing up in a very different way to those communities. The same is true when I was working with women dealing with the loss of a spouse, right? Like I have not lost a spouse. So I knew I could never walk in their shoes and totally connect there. So I went and sat with a psychologist that works in women dealing with loss. There is a spa that is owned by a widow that specifically does self-care for women caregiving to those who or terminally ill, as well as service after that. Like, those were really good places for me to be and learn and commit to how it is to serve these women and like understand the TED Talks that were really important, that are good things that I can send forward when I know that somebody's ready to hear that message. How do I know when they're ready to see that, hear that message? Because everyone grieves differently. Well, you learn the types of questions you can ask. Do you know that you don't ask a widow, how are you? Do you know you ask them, how are you in this moment? Because it changes moment to moment. Like, those are all things that you learn when you embed yourself in the community and you understand what they read, you understand what they're going through, and it allows you to show and be connective. So there's a lot of work in showing up and getting high net worth prospects. Widows are incredible clients because they're loyal and they're open and they're just processing so much. And typically, like, there's a high level of wealth and complexity there that just needs help. And they're very vulnerable to a lot of showing up in the wrong place. And we really do have a duty in servicing them. And so how do you get there and how do you do that? And then how do you create the community around it? And again, like, they're usually connecting with other people. There's groups that they're connected to that bring in other people, and you get to be a part of all of that.
And I will just add, Tiffany touched on something earlier, but we show up as yourselves too, right? High net worth people want to see who you really are. They don't just want to see the name on the brochure. So as she mentioned, be okay to be vulnerable and share personal details with these prospects or on LinkedIn or, you know, whatever mode that you're going into. Like, my clients know my details, they know my highs and my lows. So we ask them to share a lot with us, and we need to be able to share with them. And once they do that, that makes that relationship more trusted.
Yeah. And then follow through to cultivate the connection. You will hear this so much in Limitless, and I'm going to say it for the third time. It is a habit. It is not an event. Like, you have to do what you say you're going to do. The equity, like, deposits or credit or debits. Like, when you debit, it takes 3 deposits to even get it back. And debiting from an entrepreneur, for me, like, it's like the kiss of death. Like, I have to nail it. I have to nail it. Like, I have to show up and do what I said I was going to do. If they ask me to be a referral to a potential client, I need to make time and take that phone call. If they, you know, like, make sure that I'm setting them up straight. So make sure that if you say you're going to do something in a meeting and you meet with them, that you quickly do it. Time is also on your side from the follow-up. Like, it's still being on your list, but it being there 7 days later, like, that's a debit, right? Like, create space and time to be effective in the strategies that you're utilizing so that you can do them well. Build the process that allows you to be successful in it. Make the system stronger than the task so you don't fail in what you're delivering and how you're approaching it. If you say you're going to be at an event, don't bail. It's like the worst thing you can do. So if you don't want to go to the event, say no up front. Like, don't make the commitment and then have some weird excuse to back out of it. Like, those things show up really quickly reputationally as well as in relationships. And again, high net worth prospects, they're watching your every move. Like, they're the entire time they're looking into that relationship. And most of the time, by the time we get our high net worth prospects in, there's no sale. Like, it's already happened. The same way, like, following a podcast where they're listening to you and it's like they know you the entire time. So by the time you connect, like, there's no sale. They already made the decision. They already bought before they came in. That's a lot of what we're doing with high net worth prospecting. Like, we're just connecting their buyers before they actually give us the opportunity to talk to them. So the prospecting process is relatively easy because we already know a lot. Now we're just getting a little bit deeper onto the personal side. Typically, we're getting the opportunity to meet a spouse that we haven't been able to meet in the past. But if I don't do what I say I'm going to do, like, momentum stops quick. And I have failed on both sides. And I've succeeded and I failed on that as well.
Yeah. I just wanted to add to one thing that I didn't mention is, when I was doing those interviews for my target audience at the end, I would say, you know, and I just would love to know what charity is your favorite charity or something like that for the planning. And then what I would do is make a donation to that charity in that person's name. So to give something back to them, I was dealing at that point in time with executives who are really busy. So they're giving their time. So, you know, we do that interview, but then they're going to get a letter now from the charity that shows that you made a donation there on or to. So that's another touch point with that person. And that's a know, a pretty low entry point to having a relationship with someone.
I love like when the system is strong, that you can do the specialized touches. There's so many fun things you can do just picking up like the conversation of like, I'm going on vacation next month. Like, and they happen to be going to the beach and you send a beach towel and some flip flops and you're like, hey, I hope you have a really great vacation, like solid touch. But how do you have the opportunity to do that if you don't have the system to show up and consistently follow up? Because otherwise, like those are all the great ideas that get lost on your drive back to jump right back into client experience or something else. So you have to have the system where that specialized touch can land and then the ability to get it out the door. But those things are like really big. Like people care, like, oh, you heard me. I had one where they never take family pictures. And I found a photographer doing mini sessions for $50. Right. And paid for it and worked with their assistant and booked it for their family. Do you know every time they look at that family picture, who they think of? Like that things last forever. They have that on their wall at their house, right? Like super cool things that you can do. And that stuff matters in the high net worth, like prospecting, because they get VIP treatment in a lot of different ways. And so how do you create that specialized touch? Again, when you know who you serve, you can think about that differently too and do it more in bulk and scale.
Two questions. First, what kind of response do you get from them, you know, when they receive the letter from the charity? Do they give you a call or how is that gone? And then secondly, what kind of system do you have in place to be sure, like you record the information about the beach so you can send them the information? How does that fit into the process? And maybe you're going to get there.
Those are great questions. Stephanie, do you want to answer the first one?
Yeah. So I usually got a thank you note from that person that said, oh, thank you so much. You know, I really enjoyed meeting you and how nice of you to do that. That really meant a lot to me, you know? So.
Yeah. So we record it in the CRM. We have the fields that exist from like a deep discovery standpoint for our center of influence. I am sure it's on resources somewhere from a couple of years ago. If not, I'll definitely send it. I used to do it on a Word doc. And so I had like in the business stuff and then like the personal stuff about them, like what was the college they went to? Like, are they like right now, who's into March Madness and who's their team? Like totally take that down. One, bring it up in conversation. Two, college sweatshirts, huge hit. Like, you know, so just those things. But when I'm coming back from the meeting, when I had the Word doc, it was just a matter of like, I'd handwrite it and eventually go back and fill it in. And I just put an updated date on it of what was coming out. But even with the advisors and our clients, like I'm like, what's three new things you can learn about them that's outside of their wealth planning, right? So you have your wealth mapping and then you have your deep connection. And I'm just looking into areas like who are the most important people to them? Animals, pets are always huge. You can do a bark box if they're really big into their dogs, right? Like anything like that. Subscriptions are awesome. If it hits them 3 months in a row, oh my gosh, and it costs you like $10 for to send something 3 months, like they never forget it. And you hit them three consecutive times. So it's just a matter of it hitting a system. What's cool about the CRM versus a Word doc is that then can implement a workflow, right? That naturally goes to my executive assistant just got tagged for the gifting. And then you can have gift ideas that naturally come up. So she doesn't even have to think. I'm like, oh, if it's this event, we do one of these three things, right? If it's this one, we go to Etsy and get the piggy bank with the little baby's name on it. And it gets real sent out. So you can keep it and make it a full system so that it goes all the way through. But if you don't have the CRM or the workflows, or you just need to start simple, just use that worksheet and just fill it in and keep it in a file and pull it back out every time you have lunch with them or the next time you're seeing them. Or if you're sending them a personalized article, like, hey, I happen to notice that, like, I don't know, Russell Wilson got traded to the Broncos. Like, that's a really big deal, right? she's from Washington. I've never. like, you know, just whatever you can just to be like, oh, they remember me or they get me or they know me. Anytime you can add that connection, I see you, I hear you, I know you, I understand you, like credit.
Yeah. And when I was a solo firm and had to do a lot of this myself, I would just make sure I calendar block on Friday. So that's when I wrote the thank you notes and I did a lot of this follow-up myself. So send a thank you note to whoever I interviewed as well. So they're getting another touch point aside from the letter that they're getting from the charity. And you know, do everything then that'll make sure, even if you don't have all the technology built yet, I'm a big fan of technology, but if you don't have it built, I always say, still do it. Don't let the technology limit you. Just
ever.
you know, build a system around it.
Yeah. When it comes to like the women's stuff, if anyone else focusing on women, like I use this jewelry, it's called Threads, that it's women from like really remote villages that build the jewelry. And then they get a fair wage in order to do so. And then it's sold through like a third party. I mean, that's great for my women's groups who are supporting other women and want to be a part of it, right? Like that natural story of what that jewelry is, it comes with the story. It tells you about the artists who created it, where they're from and all that stuff. Huge. Like it's just a huge opportunity and a follow-up. So gifting and those specialized touches, really big when it comes to relationship building. Especially when people are driven with like the impact and the things that are happening in their world. Yeah.
One thing we've kind of struggled with a little bit with the gifts is just the gifting limits.
Yeah.
Do you do anything to kind of keep track of that, or how do you keep that in mind? Cause we did like I think when we can find the cheap gifts, that are great. Like, I think, I don't know if it was your idea, but somebody in September had the Bombas socks idea for somebody going into the hospital. And we did that. Like, it just happened to happen like a month later. Guy with cancer was going to the hospital. We sent those. Oh my, the wife responded, "How did you know? He always has cold feet," and all this stuff. And I mean, it went, you know, really far, but there's all those limits. And so we're trying to do a bunch, but does the charity thing though, that doesn't count towards any limits. So I kind of like that idea, right? And you get a charitable. Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So is there anything special you do to try and plan it out or anything?
Yeah. So, as I mentioned in building the workflows, like we're like, when you know who you're working with and the light of like the events that are coming up, right? Like the day after they close and selling their business is a really weird day for a business owner, even if there's an equity buyout, like what should we be sending that day to know and acknowledge the event that they just went through? Right? Like what happens when they get their first equity partner or they, you know, those types of things. Like we think through those things, but yeah. So for us, and then of course we have like the retirement stuff and the new babies and the graduating grandkid and all that stuff. If you can spend time, just make a list, and we try to put 3 gifts in each one of those categories. So our assistants don't have to think about it, or our client specialists don't have to think about it, and they can go. We already know that they're compliance approved. So, and it goes through a quick gifting workflow. So it naturally hits compliance and they can send it without any problem. So I would say to make it easy, there's probably a project there that's probably 2 hours of somebody's time to say, as a firm, here are the gifts that we send when these types of things show up. So then it's never a thought and it's just done.
Yeah, and a simple gift log will do. I mean, ideally in your CRM, and then you can track aggregated gifts. If you're RIA, that limit's pretty high. I mean, I think at Mission, our limit's like 250. So. Yeah.
It's gone up. If you're a broker dealer, I think it's still at the 100. Yeah. So glad to have removed that sucker. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'll let you know. Like, we don't spend 250, even though it is 250.
Yeah.
So, you know, our favorite gift recently was olive oil and vinegar from Santa Barbara. And I think it was like $30 and people have raved over it. So you don't, like you said, to the socks, it's more than unique, not just sending something with your logo on it to somebody from that standpoint.
Yeah. And don't underestimate the power of just sending a note, a handwritten note, or doing something like that.
Do you have any creative ideas around harnessing the power of your clients knowing each other and getting to know each other, you know, that community, other than what seems to be the obvious and in-person networking event? Outside of that, and or in this virtual world, how to get them? We have people who we know, oh, it'd be great if they spent time with these other 3 clients of ours.
Yeah.
Any creative ideas around that?
Yeah, there's so many things you can do. If anyone has met Joe here, he does an incredible like whiskey thing. He does a whiskey sommelier, and he's like hosted that over Zoom where they're getting familiar with one another. He's also done it in person. So I think there's certainly like those events. We were talking about it earlier, but one of my most favorite ways of bringing clients together while also learning as a group is a client advisory board. So you can naturally bring them together where they're learning a lot more about you, but like it's a series of 3 meetings. And at the end of those 3 meetings, they've learned so much about each other personally a little bit, but like how they're contributing and what they care about and hearing each other's thoughts. Like there's such a level of respect there that they are naturally connecting Outside of that, sometimes I'll take people to coffees and I'm just like, I just needed to get the three of us together because I knew that there was something super special here. And I slowly like remove myself from that, right? Like I'll take a phone call or do something along those lines or let them naturally connect. So there's definitely that. There's, you can, I mean, you can, I, the in-person events are easier than the Zoom. Zoom is getting a little bit better, but it's so hard to like meet someone and connect over Zoom. If there isn't like, just, I don't know, more of a natural way. Like I've done in dinners, like executive dinners where I'm just like, hey, like everybody, I just wanted to bring everyone together. We're just paying for a meal. And I bring in a, somebody that they can ask questions to, and we're just there to pay the bill. But they naturally get to talk to each other and start learning it. And so those are all different ways. I mean, do you have anything additional
to add to that? It's good sometimes too. So if you've got a very specific audience, you might find a book. Maybe that's something you read that you're really passionate about. Like a friend of mine did Essentialism. 4,000 Weeks is a really popular one right now too, talking about just how much life we have left, you know? And so you might say, hey, I think it would be great. I thought you all might enjoy this book and I think you might enjoy knowing one another. Yeah, how about we read the first five chapters of this book and come together? I'd love to hear your ideas on it and talk about it.
Yeah, that's a really good one as well.
We are already an hour in, so yes. We probably should go forward and then come back for more questions and working to help you guys work through some ideas that you're going to implement.
Let me think through more of that too. Invite and show up. So just to the events that may resonate. I tend to, we do host a few events. It takes a lot of work to host events. Sometimes they're wildly successful and sometimes they're not. And so I've gotten really clear and I'm more strict about the events that we host. More so I'm looking for what type of events are already being hosted that we can show up and I can bring or invite a crowd to go to so that it's already naturally hosted. I don't have to worry about any of the setup or whatnot. And I get the opportunities to connect with who I'm looking to connect with in a much smaller format. So that's a really great way to do invite and show up. If you are doing events with Center of Influence or anything else, one of the tricks that I've loved is that it's always the worst when you like bring all the people and then like the other side doesn't. And you're like, this sucks. Like this was supposed to be it. So I have a rule of we each need to bring at least five. And if we don't, the other person has to foot the entire bill. And then I will order extra. but that helps create some level of accountability to if we're going to drive these events, this is what matters. And then also set the expectation that if we can't do this successfully the first time, then there's probably not a reason to do it again. Because events take a lot of time. Again, you can't work all strategy. So if you're going to host private events, like you need to make sure that there's going to be an ROI there for you. And how do you ensure that? And how do you ensure that if you're sharing the event?
The question was, have you ever charged a client or prospect to attend an event?
We have not yet, but we are actually working on that. Where we're going to host some more VIP things where it has a little bit of the travel and like we see like the investment bankers doing like heli skiing and like all of those types of things where we're going to go to fancier places where there will be a level of them paying to participate in that. And so the idea would be that we put it all together to create the experience, but they will be charged to come to those events. You?
No, I've never charged. I find in Colorado, we always had trouble getting people to events, like even client appreciation events. There's just so much to compete with in Colorado, I think.
Yeah.
But it had to be like a really good event, you know, like I was able to get advance tickets to like a museum opening. And so everybody was going to be able to go see the opening, but the fact that I got them the first week and we got group tickets with a tour guide was pretty good. So look for those things that are really compelling if you're doing an event, because I just think people have a lot competing with them, especially now they're used to staying home. They don't want to drive anywhere. So if you do that kind of event, I would just be careful. And again, that wasn't super high cost. I mean, we did do a reception with somebody else with one of them. And then the other one, I said, hey, we're going to meet in the bar first for drinks and appetizers, but it was very limited. I picked up the check and then we went to tickets for the museum were like $30 a piece. It wasn't very much. So I'll also add to just piggybacking on what Tiffany said earlier about a client advisory board. I actually had an advisory board. It contained clients, but it was other people as well too. So this is, again, another place where I might interact with a COI or other people and say, would you mind helping me? You got to be very clear about the time commitment because these are all busy people. But if you say, look, I'm going to get you together for, you know, maybe twice a year to run some things by you. And they then become very vested in your business. And I think for me, it was like when I was starting my own firm, like these are the people who gave me the confidence. Like they had so much confidence in me, I knew I could go start my firm. The same thing with you. If they have confidence in what you're doing, that's not only going to help you and be a sounding board for some of the things you're implementing, but they're then going to be fierce advocates for you as well too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's totally a way to do it. Fact find conversationally. So regardless if they're events that you're using or you're in the environment in which you're passion prospecting or all that, again, like you're looking to be authentic, but there's always going to be opportunities to talk. Matt Jarvis used to always say, like, he used to do like the biking or whatever. And he used to always be like, oh, I'm just the money guy, right? Like that was his thing. And oh, this isn't the environment. We should grab a coffee, but I'm just the money guy. What do I know? Like those used to be his thing that he always said. Like anytime with it, when it comes up for me, I mean, most of the time the nice thing about connecting with so many women is it's just like such a vulnerable, open conversation about whatever we're going through. And so a lot of times it's like, oh man, like I'm going through this in the business, or like, we just solved this. And like, I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity to do this as a firm, blah, 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 blah. And they're just like, oh my gosh, like, how did you do that? And so it's okay. Even in non-soliciting environments, is which I mostly show up in. YPO is non-solicit, EO is non-solicit, TrueSpace is non-solicit. Like I'm not supposed to go to my brilliance group and like we're all there for life coaching to solicit business. Like they're all non-solicit, but they're all opportunities. Like just connecting, and I'm passionate about what I do. I'm just sharing my story. And when they ask, they're genuinely asking to get to know me. And then there's an opportunity to talk about the business. And we do. Like, I'm not ashamed of the business I do. I'm just not there to sell it.
Yeah, I think that goes back to a lot of what Carl was saying too. You want to show up with curiosity with people. Mm-hmm. So whether it be a prospect, a COI, there's a really good lesson on the library from our founder, Seth Streeter, on conscious conversations. You know, instead of saying, what do you do? It's sort of like, gosh, what really fills you up about being a DC lawyer, you know, or when you're at one of your networking group, like, tell me about this. It must be really exciting to do the kind of work that you do. What did you have to go through to get to the position you're in today? Those kind of curiosity conversations.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. How did you solve that? Like, what did that look like? Just a lot of those questions and the failure formula. Oh my God, they're $20 million, right? Like you're already starting by chasing the money. Like you didn't even get interested in them. Like they see that high net worth prospecting is just so different. Like they know if you're coming after them for the money, they are right there. They've been approached 1,000 times. Everybody's been after them for the money. So like, how are you differentiating yourself? Desperate for prospects. Again, like it's like they can smell it. Like, you know, like you're showing up. And who wants to be in that position to be desperate for them? Again, if we know who we're serving in the seats, then it's either right, yes or no. And the decision is theirs. And we can't be attached to that. And if you are ever attached to it, you need to go and do the work on yourself because you're not in the right seat to serve them. So that's not the right formula to be desperate for prospects. Again, how are you showing up and planting the seeds and understanding that as you water them, things will grow. It'll come. Be consistent. Make sure you're showing up. And, you know, misery, few friends, and zero clients. I happen to have misery, a lot of friends and zero clients when I was going through it. When I took this formula for a test, on my early days where it was, you could eat what you kill. And so, I was totally chasing the money. I was super desperate for clients. I happened to be showing up a lot, but I didn't know how to sell myself. So I made like a lot of friends who wanted me to say yes to a lot. And I did. And I had no clients. And it was not the formula to work. It wasn't clear. They understood that the moment I got opportunities, like this showed up in my prospecting process. And it was a no every single time, to the point that I was crying on like, who do I buy shoes for? Like my son or my husband. And that was 2016. We're in a very different place now. So you have to make sure that you're super clear and you're good. Like you were just there to inform so that people can make their decisions. And that's what that says. Be intentional. Selectively engage, right? Don't be all things to all people. Know who you're looking to be around. Know where you want to be. Know what you're excited to be at. Know what you're not excited to be at. Above the line, below the line activities. And work on building relationships. This is not transactional. If you find yourself in a transactional place, you're not in the high net worth prospecting area. If you're in a transactional place, it's like a really great place for like Fidelity Call Center, right? Like you're there to sell and do what you need to do. Like be in a call center and provide that opportunity in a super transactional, and you're never going to talk to them again. If you're looking to have clients for 30 years, you have to start it off right with building relationships. Here are all the things that you can do and look at. Make sure that you go to the passion prospecting so that you can continue to look through it. Seth Streeter, as she's mentioned a couple of times, the Untethered Life. Seth's amazing. He's done TED Talks. Like he's done an incredible job really working into the high net worth community, but by doing it purely through impact and passion prospecting. He doesn't do anything he doesn't love so much that he naturally just creates connection because he's leading the charge of those areas. And then ACT, which is what we're going to do now.